Hello, podcast listener. You're listening to a Halford and Brough podcast, and I'm using my podcast voice. You can listen to us on Google, Apple, Spotify. It's the Halford and Brough podcast, and thank you for listening.
7 o'clock on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. We will lay out the remainder of the show real quick so you know what to expect over the final 2 hours. Programming note, hour one, the podcast will be up momentarily. You can hear our hit with Peter Galindo about the Max Crépeau trade. Not finalized by the Whitecaps yet, but it appears that it was very far down the road. Apple, Google, Spotify, you can get them on any of your favorite platforms. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to leave a review. Do all that good stuff. Greg, what are you doing over there, bud? You're making a lot of, you're gesticulating.
I'm
in the background.
Smashing the subscribe button.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
You're subscribing to the Halford and Brough podcast. Good. So the remainder of the show, 7:30, Frank Saravalli, our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff, is going to join us. 8 o'clock, former Canucks assistant coach Nolan Baumgartner is joining us. But right now, we're happy to have our next guest on the line. 6'11" forward from Utah Valley University, a product of Steveston London Secondary from Richmond. Fardoz Amak joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Fardoz. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know, this story landed on our radar through a listener who was like, you guys really need to be paying more attention to what Fardoz is doing at Utah Valley University. So we dug into the story. I'm not going to lie, I was not all that familiar with Utah Valley prior to this, but I looked at the numbers and I looked at your numbers and I saw, hey, Mark Madsen is coaching there. And I thought, we got to do this. So can you walk the listeners through how you got all the way from Richmond, British Columbia, to Utah Valley University?
Yeah, so I left my senior year of high school. I left Canada to go out east. I played my senior year of high school out east in Maine. And then I played my freshman year of college down in Georgia. And my coach got fired my freshman year, so I entered the transfer portal and went through that process. And going through that process, about a couple weeks in, Mark Madsen ended up getting the job at Utah Valley. And obviously, I knew who Mark Madsen was, but I didn't know who – well, I had never heard of Utah Valley before either.
Right.
So for me, it was kind of a new situation as well. So once Mark had got the job, he started recruiting me. And then from there, it was just kind of – it was easy for me to figure out what I wanted.
So let me ask you, your journey has been Richmond or Vancouver to Maine and then to Georgia and then Utah Valley. You've seen quite a bit of the United States and very different parts of the United States. What's that been like culturally for you?
For me, obviously, you know, growing up in Richmond and being around a lot of, you know, different types of people, different races, religions. You know, I've always been very used to multicultural situations. And, you know, going out to Maine, it was a culture shock for me at first, especially not just the people and stuff. The weather was one that I was really not used to. In the wintertime, there was a couple times where, you know, the snow got up to like waist deep, and I was just like, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen snow like this. Like, I've seen snow, but not like this. And then obviously, you know, going down to Georgia, a very different, you know, place compared to anywhere else in the United States. The South is somewhere where it's a great place. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it has, you know, it's bad things and, you know, it's perks, whatever, but I was able to experience that Southern culture, the Southern food. Obviously the Southern accents was something that was kind of new to me at first too. The first couple of weeks I was out there, I couldn't understand what people were saying because they were talking so fast and their accents were, you know, kind of confusing. But obviously, you know, now being in Utah, predominantly, you know, an LDS, you know, population of Mormon people, and And, you know, for me, I've kind of seen it all, and it's kind of set me up for really anything that will kind of come towards my way in terms of culture and people and just different types of situations that can come from that.
You know, it's interesting. In a lot of the stories that have been written about you, including the big one on ESPN last week, the topics of faith and religion get mentioned a lot, obviously, because as a Muslim going to, as you mentioned, a place where it's predominantly LDS Mormon, that jumps to the forefront. But I thought it was interesting that you explained that there's actually a lot of commonalities when you just talk about the basic tenets of faith and religion, maybe not necessarily who you pray to, but how everyone lives their lives and the ideas that they kind of have about it. I thought that was an interesting take on the whole situation.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
We're speaking to Fardoz Amak here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Fardoz, junior at Utah Valley University under head coach Mark Madsen. Let's talk about the basketball side of things here, because I imagine, and you said earlier in the call, you weren't all that familiar with Utah Valley, but you obviously had to be familiar with Mark Madsen. 9 years with the Lakers, a couple of championships. Was his presence there a big reason why you wanted to go there? Because he's obviously a guy that can teach you a lot of things about playing at the NBA level.
100%. You know, so I, coming out during the time when I was transferring out of, you know, my freshman year when my coaching got fired, I had like my top three, you know, list of schools that, you know, I was thinking of, and Utah Valley wasn't even on the list yet. But there was, you know, there was something that kind of came up, and they were like, well, hey, can you come visit, you know, this weekend, upcoming weekend? And at that point, I wasn't, you know, I didn't have another visit with another school set up. My other visits were, you know, in a couple weeks from that point. So I was like, you know, sure, I'm going to come visit. And once I had got to campus, you know, we did a little 30-minute workout with Mark Madsen, and that was where I was kind of just taken away. Like, I was, in my head, I was like, you know, I learned things in, you know, 30 minutes that I had never learned before. And it was just surreal to, you know, to learn from somebody, you know, who played your position at the highest level, knows what it takes to play your position at the highest level. And for me, you know, I just kind of sat down and thought, well, if I spend, you know, a year, because the rules at the time were if you transfer, you got to, you know, redshirt for a year, you got to sit out. And just thinking, like, if I, you know, that time, if I work with, you know, coach, you know, how much better I could be. And a year coming back, you know, ready to play the year after. And that's where I knew at the time, I was just like, I'm committed to Mark and his squad. And I didn't even end up visiting some of the other schools that I was supposed to.
What is the key to being a good rebounder, besides being really tall and big and strong and wanting the ball? What are some of the technical things that you have to work on? Or is it just that you need to be big and tall and really want the ball?
I think for me, it's more about instinct, right? And also understanding angles. You know, like a lot of people say, like, because I've seen some dudes that, you know, you look at them and you think, like, dang, like this dude should be able to rebound, you know, the heck out the ball, but, you know, they just can't do it. But, like, they have the size, they have the athleticism, they have this, and that. But a lot of it comes down to just understanding, like, what rebounding is. Like, if someone shoots a shot, you know, on the right side corner, you know, 8 out of 10 times the ball is going to, you know, land on the other side. So just understanding angles for me has been kind of big, like understanding positioning, putting myself in the right spot. And then, obviously, you know, just like you said, like wanting the ball. Like, you know, those guys are going to, you know, guys are going to miss shots. You know, that's part of basketball. And the other team's going to try to get the ball, and it just depends on how bad you want the ball.
We're speaking to Fardoz Amak here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, the second leading rebounder in all of college basketball right now for Utah Valley University. I mentioned the statistics there, Fardoz, because in that same ESPN piece I alluded to earlier, there's a lot of talk about the next level, about the NBA. Last year, you know, you led the NBA in rebounds. You were the WAC player of the year, the WAC defensive player of the year. So you tested the NBA draft process, ultimately deciding you're going back to school. What was that process like, and why did you decide to return for your junior year?
You know, for me, the process was super helpful, and just going through it kind of prepared me for what to expect, you know, for I, you know, decided to come back to school. You know, I gained a lot of knowledge and information, not just from scouts, but from, you know, NBA GMs and different types of people that I met along the process. For me, you know, I didn't know exactly, you know, what it was going to be like going into it, but obviously coming out of it, like, now I understand, like, hey, it's going to take this, this, and this, and all the information and feedback I got, you know, trying to put it into this season and you know, put it into the body of work to show those NBA scouts, like, I worked on this, this, and this, and this is the stuff that you guys wanted me to work on. So for me, it was, you know, it was a helpful process that obviously was a little bit stressful, you know, going into it, but it was something that, you know, I'm very thankful for that I got the opportunity to do. Obviously working out with a couple different teams, doing a pro day where, you know, every single team was there. And it was something that I think definitely obviously has helped me, you know, moving forward and getting ready for, you know, future draft process.
Fardoz, when Mike and I were in high school, what, 25 years ago now, is it? Feels like 600 years ago. Okay. A long time ago, let's just say. There weren't many Canadians in the NBA or playing for schools in the NCAA. When Steve Nash made it, it was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's different now. There's lots of Canadians playing in the NCAA. There's stars in the NBA. Does that give you a confidence as a Canadian that you can do that too?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I was just reading something the other day. I think, you know, Canadians are the second most, you know, drafted players from any other country besides, obviously, the United States. And just the culture that, you know, Canada has slowly started, you know, to show a lot of these, you know, American schools, you know, American teams that, hey, like, we got dudes up here too, you know, has obviously not just helped me out, but, you know, it's going to help out the generation after me and the kids after me and the people trying to, you know, achieve their goals, whether it's the NCAA or it's, you know, playing in the NBA. So I think it's something that has obviously, you know, grown a ton and then, you know, is going to continue to grow a ton too, just because of, you know, obviously the amount of people playing the sport and the talent that's that we're producing, you know, at a high level up here.
Well, you're having a terrific second season at Utah Valley. It's been awesome to get all this information and learn more about you and get caught up on what's been a pretty cool story coming all the way from Richmond. Fardoz, we want to wish you the best of luck with everything moving forward this season and with whatever comes in store with regards to the NBA draft. Let's try and do this again as we get further on down the season. Hopefully you guys can make the tournament this year. Best of luck with everything moving forward, and thanks again for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, appreciate you too. Thank you. That's Fardoz Amak here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. A very well-spoken young man.
So when we have young athletes on the show, sometimes we have to be overly prepped. Mm-hmm. Like normally, you know, Halford and I, we have no idea what we're doing. We don't prep much, but you have to be prepped for the young athletes because sometimes they give really short answers and you're like, okay, I got to ask another question here. And then another one. Wasn't the case. Speaking to Fardoz, he's a very well-spoken young man, and I just became a pretty big fan, I think.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the NBA seems like, I don't want to say a foregone conclusion, but if you're 6'11" and you have the kind of athleticism that he has and you're the leading rebounder in college basketball, a pretty good chance you're going to land on an NBA roster or you're going to get several kicks at the can at the next level. And remember, it's been an awfully long time since a BC high school product. And it's funny to say, it's been so too long since a BC high school kid has
been
in the
NBA. What, is Kelly Olynyk like 600 now?
But Kelly Olynyk is really, I mean, he's the gold standard right now because he's still alive and kicking in the NBA. But hopefully Fardoz will be able to make that jump. I'll be very curious to see how the rest of his year goes at Utah Valley. Of all the, I mean, and Dom brought it up. We should have brought it up, but we were running short on time. If Mark Madsen's infamous dance at the Lakers NBA championship parade is still making the rounds. I didn't get to ask Fardoz that, but I imagine it's probably still.
I imagine that GIF is used frequently in circulation in their group chats.
What a great find for him, though. Like, you couldn't come up with a better guy to emulate what you need to do to get to the next level. Because let's be honest, Mark Madsen got to the NBA, yes, because he played at Stanford and he was a very good basketball player, but his career in LA was made largely because he worked harder than everyone else. He was a dogged rebounder, and he found out what it took to hang around. Because quite honestly, there's probably a lot of guys with Mark Madsen's skill set that aren't in the NBA or hadn't been in the NBA at his time.
Well, leading up to the NBA draft, we should definitely pursue Mark Madsen to have on the show.
Yeah, great idea.
To talk about Fardaz. Because these are the type of local stories that I really like.
Yeah.
Fardaz has a really interesting backstory. Mm-hmm. And think of his basketball journey. Starts in Richmond, goes to Maine, yep. Which is, you know, it's East Coast.
It's prep school in Maine. It is.
But then
is,
goes to Mercer College or Mercer University. I think it's Mercer College in Georgia.
Correct.
And then goes to Utah Valley.
Yeah.
Like, what is Hawaii next? Or has he seen Alaska? Are there any other, like, dramatically different parts of the United States that he has to go to?
I mean, it's funny now because with the he alluded to the transfer portal. With the transfer portal, it's part of the allure, I think, would be you can really up and change your locale if you're not thrilled with where you're at. Because when he was at Mercer, the coach that recruited him got fired. Mm. So, I mean, you think about it from a professional sports perspective. Sometimes when a new coach comes in, you're like, uh-oh.
This guy doesn't know me. He didn't recruit me. He didn't want me.
He's got no affiliation to me, right? The transfer portal allows you to kind of up and move. And if it wasn't for that transfer portal, Fardaz wouldn't have been able to go to, of all places, Utah Valley, but land with a coach like Mark Madsen, who's obviously taken his game to the next level.
He was very mature. He is 23 years old, though. He just turned 23. So it's different than talking to a freshman.
For sure.
And anyway, he handled himself very well. Frank Saravalli is going to join us in about 15 minutes.
High bar for Frank now, I tell you what.
Yeah, well, Fardaz didn't have any updates on the JT Miller situation at all.
No, I know. That was a bit disappointing.
Well, you didn't ask him.
Well, I texted him. Yeah. I was like, do you know what's going on with JT Miller? Are the Rangers interested? Frank Saravalli.
Do you think they should trade Halak?
is going to join us at 7:30 to talk about that. The Vancouver Canucks, in case you're just joining us, they're going to practice in just a few hours at Rogers Arena. And there's a lot of kind of pressing questions right now for the head coach. And a lot of it's just player availability. Like, when do you think you're going to have Bo Horvat, Connor Garland, Yaroslav Halak available for you? What is their situation down in the States right now while they're quarantining in various places? Where's Horvat? He's with Sautner in Nashville.
That's correct.
And Garland apparently drove to Boston from D.C. Where's Halak?
North Carolina.
North Carolina? Okay.
Yeah. We really need that Santa tracker, I tell you.
We do need a tracker for these players.
Yeah, and again, we should clarify and give credit where credit is due. According to several of our listeners, it was Rick Dhaliwal who reported that Garland got in a car and drove to Boston. Again, the reporting that we passed along was the reporting from Patrick Johnson of the Province, who said that Garland wouldn't be able to get out of Washington, D.C. until Friday, which is tomorrow. Again, please, I respect the fact that everyone wants to maybe make us aware of the news. So that's great that you're texting in and everything. I'm not really going to apologize for not knowing exactly what's going on, because it appears as though this is the
most... You don't need to apologize.
This is the most fluid situation of what... Well, you get a lot of clapback in this industry when you're not... You don't have all the information. Like, you're supposed to quote-unquote know what's going on. It's never been our forte here at the Halford
and
Brough Show.
Yeah, knowing what's going on.
No, we kind of have an idea of what's happening.
We have a general sense. It's like general allocation money. Yeah. We have a general sense of what's going on. It's not targeted.
Right.
It's not specific sense. We have a general sense that the Canucks have some players down in the States can't come back to Canada yet. Another question for Bruce Boudreau. What is going on with Travis Hamonic?
Are we getting Bruce Boudreau?
No, at the media avails.
I was like, damn, good pull. No, I know. Today's media availability after the 10:30 skate. What's the other one you had for him?
What's going on with Travis Hamonic?
What is going on with Travis Hamonic? Do we have any update on this? Have we had an update on this within the last week?
It seems like we only get, again, like a general sense of what's going on with Travis Hamonic. We don't get the specifics. Like, we know it's a lower body injury.
More like Travis Gammonick.
But do we?
Gammonick.
No, it always feels like there's something else going on behind the scenes with Travis Hamonic.
Another question would be,
otherwise they'd just be so much more direct about it with the information.
Another question would be, how much can you realistically expect from him if he's healthy and eligible to return? Because he's played just a handful of games this year. I mean, that was sort of the big issue. Remember in the start of last season when Hamonic barely showed up before the start of camp and then got thrown right into the lineup? It took him a fair amount of time to get up to game speed, where you're like, okay, he looks like he's finally gotten his legs underneath him. It looks like he's getting cut. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into this. There's comfort level, there's reps, there's finding your defensive partner. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to achieve any of those things when you're never in the lineup. I mean, I would be concerned about game shape if he's healthy to return. Can you just flip him right in and expect him to play close to 17, 18, 19 minutes a night? Be asking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time they played? Do you have his game log in front of you? Like,
I don't
he's played
know.
A handful of games
He's only
this
played
year.
A handful of games, yeah. Travis the Courier texts in, Halak took a train to Boise, Idaho. Huh. I don't think that's true, Travis. Other questions for Frank Saravalli coming up. I think we need to talk about the two teams involved in our poll question, our Schadenfreude poll question, in case you missed that, is which would you rather? The Oilers miss the playoffs or the Leafs lose in the first round? There's been around 500 votes on Twitter. 71% of you are saying you're going to pick the Leafs losing in the first round. We've asked a lot of questions about what are the Oilers going to do? And the answer seems to be, well, if they can sign Evander Kane, they'll probably sign Evander Kane. And if they can improve the goaltending, they'll try, but it's going to be really hard. What are the Leafs going to do ahead of the trade deadline,
they're going to get Jacob Chychrun out of Arizona?
Well, I don't think so. I think that's like, first of all, how are they going to, how would they address the defense if they can? They can't protect leads right now. And I realize Jake Muzzin is out. He's got a concussion. He's very important to them as a player. Doesn't get a lot of attention, but he's a fairly steady top four defenseman. I think he struggled a bit this year. The Leafs' defense just in general always seems like it's in flux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, what is going on? Is this Liljegren guy in or Sandin? Are they going to address that? Because if they go into the playoffs and they can't protect a lead, they're not going anywhere.
There's a lot of talk about Nylander for Chychrun. That would be the centerpieces of a deal.
I think that would be an off-season move.
Well, they might not have the luxury of having an off-season move. If they don't win in the playoffs, the guy that could have made the move in February might not be around after the season is done. Here's the thing about the Leafs. I heard this line last night, so I'm stealing it, taking it for my own. They're more sizzle than steak. They're more icing than cake. It's exactly what they are to me. They've got a lot of flash, and they can score goals. But when it comes down to all the stuff that hockey cliches are made of, grit, defense, winning in the playoffs, winning one goal games, they don't have it. They're a fancy team.
It's true, and fancy teams, we've seen they don't win that often in the playoffs. Think of some of the teams that we've seen that play that sort of style, like the Dallas Stars,
the fire wagon hockeys.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the Leafs are constantly playing fire wagon hockey. They've actually got a pretty good goals against this year, but I wonder how much of that is just the goaltending.
Let's go to the audio, because we've got audio from Sheldon Keefe yesterday after a loss against the New York Rangers, where I would say all of the issues that plagued the Leafs came to a head. They couldn't keep the puck out of their net. They gave up a ton of goals. They blew another lead. I think this is the fourth multi-goal lead that they've blown in their last five games. And Sheldon Keefe called him out. Do we have the audio, laddie? Let's hear from Sheldon Keefe, Leafs head coach, after yesterday's collapse at Madison Square Garden.
I just thought we got exposed today for being a team that was just soft and purposeless and just kind of playing the game and just hoping it was going to work out. But I didn't think we had anybody that played well tonight. Coaches didn't coach well tonight. So today is a much different game than we've played in the others where we've given up and given up leads and such. I just didn't think we had nearly enough urgency or purpose.
Soft and purposeless.
That's tough.
I like purposeless. It's like the Leafs are going through an existential crisis or something. Yeah. Like, what is my purpose on this planet?
Yeah.
Protect the lead.
John Tavares just sitting in his locker stall saying, why?
Yeah.
Why?
If we all die in the end, what's the point of even winning in the first round of the playoffs? Why even bother?
Do we even need to win the Atlantic anymore?
The Leafs just turn into a bunch of like nihilist. Kind of like to see it. Frank Cervelli coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What is their situation down in the States right now while they're quarantining in various places?
That's all, folks.
On a Thursday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Today is one of those days where those people say, you don't talk enough about other sports, have been silenced. Dare I say, shut up. Peter Galindo joined us in hour one. Fantastic Sportsnet soccer insider. Got the latest scoop on the Max Crépeau trade out of Vancouver. Download the hour one podcast to hear that one. If the soccer talk didn't enthrall you enough, we did some college basketball talk in hour two, the hour we're currently in the midst of. Our new favorite NCAA basketball player, Fardez Amak. He's now our guy, right?
Oh, yeah, he's our guy for sure. Yeah.
Jake Livingstone from the University of Minnesota Mankato is our hockey guy.
Just call it Minnesota State.
I refuse to call it Minnesota State Mankato. He is our hockey guy. He, of course, is the number one defenseman on the number one team in all of college hockey. And now we've got the number one rebounder in all of college basketball. We need to get our NIL game sorted out.
Can I quickly just say, he can't say it's Minnesota State because Minnesota State has its own team. It's the Mavericks. He's not a part of that team.
That's his team.
No.
He's a Maverick.
Is it
Jake
the Mavericks?
Livingstone. Yep. Yep. And Laddie has his hand in his head. Hand on forehead, rubbing
temples.
Thought
it was two different teams. I'm sorry.
Minnesota State dash Mankato.
Duluth is the other one you're thinking.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There
it's actually go. Minnesota State University, comma Mankato.
A comma, not a dash.
Yes.
We're learning so much right now.
Punctuation matters, folks. Punctuation matters. To the phone lines we go as we get back into hockey and the NHL. Our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff, Frank Cervelli, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing all right, guys. How are you doing?
We're good, thanks. We played a clip from your appearance earlier on Sportsnet 650, not our show, but one of the different ones. And it got
one of the lesser shows.
That's right. There's so many of them. We got Jason all
I'm
excited.
Tell them you said that.
Yeah, that's fine. They don't care. You got Jason very excited because Jason has long thought that the potential of moving JT Miller is one that the Canucks should explore, if only because of their competitive window and where they may be, et cetera, et cetera. And then you reported that one of the teams that might be interested is none other than JT Miller's former team, the New York Rangers. Now, I would assume that if anybody's available, the Rangers would probably be interested, at least in terms of having a conversation, because they've got that one elusive things that a lot of teams don't have, and that's available cap space.
Available cap space, available draft picks. Some potentially available young players. It's a whole gamut of interesting things that the Rangers could dangle back to the Vancouver Canucks for JT Miller. And I think, excuse me, I'm actually just in the middle of getting over COVID. You look at the teams that are interested in JT Miller, and there's a handful or more than a handful that have checked in. And I do think it's certainly heating up there. Now, the interesting part that I've sort of been wondering in the back end of this is how does JT Miller feel about this? How, you know, in some ways, knowing that he's going to need an extension over the summer, he does have some modicum of control in that he can indicate sort of subtly through his agent where he'd like to go. And I think as productive as he's been, I think this is potentially what makes it a little bit easier for Jim Rutherford, is that it seems like the early indication is that, he's open to the idea of moving on and playing elsewhere. So there's certainly been no request made or anything like that. I think he just has an open mind in terms of where this is all heading, what the Canucks cap picture looks like, where the team is heading, all those things that, you know, certainly makes, I think, this trade a little bit more likely.
Yeah, because I'm not surprised to hear that teams are interested in JT Miller. He's having a terrific season. He could certainly help a team, any team, But the question really is, are the Canucks open to trading him? Have you heard much about that?
I think they are. I think when you look at where this team has been and where they're heading, I think they have to be open to anything. That's really the truth of it. I think in a sense, as the general manager interviews continue on this week and Jim Rutherford hopes to have someone in place by, you know, the February 1st range or first week of February, that I think the plan for a while had been to hold off and before really engaging in conversation with teams about players like Miller that have sort of been, you know, phoning constantly to check in, that I think in some ways, it, you know, that doesn't necessarily need to happen. Meaning, I do think there's been a lot of smoke there in terms of the conversations. And I think it's certainly been heating up in a way that, is it possible that you could see something before a general manager is in place for the Vancouver Canucks? It is. I think in an ideal world, they'd like to wait and make sure everyone's on the same page. But at the same time, I think if Jim Rutherford gets a deal that he likes, that he's going to pull the trigger.
Braden Schneider, a prospect for the Rangers who's actually played a few games for them this season, right shot defenseman, 19th overall pick in 2020, just 20 years old. I wonder if the Rangers would make him available in any trade because they're pretty set on the right side of their defense, at least in the top four with Adam Fox and Jacob Trouba.
Well, I'm glad you said the top four because after that, they don't really have a lot. Like, they don't really have their solidified. If you're going to be a cup contender, and I know it's one of those details when you say, okay, but we've got Fox and we've got Trouba. Yeah, it's a pretty solid top two pair right shot D to run out there. You're still going to need someone on your third pair. And so I don't think Braden Schneider is quite ready for that type of action yet on a cup contender. Maybe that makes him expendable. Maybe it doesn't. Because I think the Rangers, you know, you have to consider where they're coming from too. It's not all that long ago that, you know, you had Jeff Gorton in place sending out that letter saying, we're tearing things down to the studs. This is going to be a complete rebuild. Please be patient. It's January of 2022 now, and they've made incredible strides. They're in a great position with cap space, with assets. They're, you know, right near the top of the division in terms of points percentage. Are they really in the spot yet to be pushing all their chips in and trading a guy like a Schneider, a first round pick, depending on how you view him, if you're the Rangers, you know, we'll get an indication of exactly what they're thinking. But my guess is Chris Drury's trying to put the Rangers in a spot where they can compete to win this year and try and give them some help. And a guy like Miller is great because he signed for next year at a really reasonable cap hit. And if he wanted, you could afford to sign him to an extension most likely, but you're probably in a position where you want this team to be competitive for like the next 7 years. And how much are guys like Schneider going to be a part of that?
The Rangers beat the Leafs last night. The Leafs blew another lead. It's become a bit of a habit for them. They're still going to make the playoffs. They're still a good team. Do you think the Leafs are going to be active leading up to the trade deadline? Can they be active? Do they have the assets? Do they have the cap space? Do they have the desire to change their team much?
I don't think so. And I think there were probably some lessons learned last year in trading for Nick Foligno and the assets that they gave up to get him. And of course, we've seen deadline deals turn out exactly like that. We've seen deadline deals do the opposite and propel your team onto the Stanley Cup. And so there's plenty of evidence, you know, in both directions. But more often than not, it leans towards something like the Maple Leafs did last year. And I think when you look at this team, the success that they've had again in the regular season, how much, you know, what type of player are we talking about at the deadline? If it's squeezing in John Klingberg, well, then like that's a bit of a different conversation. And again, it's only a rental. But if it's you know, giving up major, major assets for someone that isn't really moving the needle like Nick Foligno didn't do last year, well, then I think they're in a spot where they say, well, why don't we just roll the dice with what we have rather than continue to expend future capital and remortgage things. So that's where they're at. They just recently wrapped up their pro scouting meetings and amateur scouting meetings out west in the U.S. last week while the team was out there. I think that's part of the thinking that's emanated from that is, you know, last year where they were kind of in a spot where they had such a good team in the north and it was like, hey, we have this unique opportunity here. All we have to do is win our division and we can get to the Final Four and then who knows. And there was this sort of feeling like, what if we don't do anything? What's the reaction in the market going to be like? Well, then they went out and did it and then saw that reaction too. And so maybe that sort of makes you think that what you have is decent enough to take a chance. And maybe there's a move around the edges or margins that maybe could help that team.
We're speaking to Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Frank, you mentioned the Canucks general manager search. It kind of feels like the Canucks are now the next one up on the clock now that Kent Hughes has been named and hired in Montreal. Jason and I joked the other day, we're like, oh yeah, we kind of forgot about the Canucks GM search. And part of that has to do with the fact that I think everyone understands that at the end of the day, Jim Rutherford's vision and final sign-off is going to mean that this is largely his show. But let's not diminish the fact that a GM job is still a GM job. One, are you getting the sense that the Canucks are close to naming a new general manager? And two, do you have the same sort of intel along the lines of what Friedman and Merrick had on their show, that it seems as though Patrick Alvin might be the leader for the position?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought that really kind of from the beginning, just with Patrick Alvin and his relationship with Jim Rutherford going back to Pittsburgh and how he seemed like sort of the next guy up. I do think there has to be some concern about if you're Canucks ownership about, you know, how many people exactly is Jim Rutherford bringing on from Pittsburgh? You know, Derek Clancy was one. You know, how long does that list grow? I think that's certainly part of it. It'll be really interesting to see how the interview goes. I believe Patrick Alvin, if it's not today, it's in the next couple of days, the face-to-face meeting with Jim Rutherford and Canucks ownership in Vancouver. And you know, we'll see where it goes. I don't think it's, you know, in the next 24 to 48 hours, we're going to know, but I do think it's in the next 5, 7, 10 days that there's going to be a resolution to what, you know, has seemingly dragged on for a bit. And it's funny that you made that caveat about Montreal and really the same sort of setup exists. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe actually even more so that Jeff Gorton is running the Montreal Canadiens than Jim Rutherford would be running the Vancouver Canucks on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour sort of transaction basis. This, it feels like the general manager in Vancouver is going to have a bit more say, a bit more power and control than, you know, perhaps what plays out in Montreal. It seems more collaborative there. But, you know, it'd be really interesting to see how this all plays out.
There's three gigs, really, that drew my interest. One was Montreal, the Vancouver one, obviously, and then Anaheim, because Anaheim, don't forget, is also looking for a new general manager. If you think about the trade deadline in those three jobs, imagine how profound they could be, because Montreal, obviously, could be a seller at this deadline. Vancouver...
You think they'll sell?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they might.
They're sellers.
Vancouver, we just talked about, and then Anaheim, who we spent a considerable amount of time talking about today. If they're in a bit of a funk right now, they might be on the outside looking in by the time the deadline comes around. You're talking about guys like Rickard Rakell, Ryan Getzlaff, Josh Manson, Hampus Lindholm, all of whom are UFAs. So I'll ask you the same question there. One, what are you hearing on the Anaheim front? Two, is there a push to get a GM in there so that he can make these decisions ahead of the deadline?
There's really not. Like, there's no sense of urgency to my knowledge about Anaheim and the process that's unfolding there. It's very slow. It's very deliberate. I think they're just beginning to have sort of entree conversations with potential candidates. It's it's really slow moving and honestly surprising given all the reasons you mentioned, given the massive decisions that need to be made for the future of that team. They've far exceeded expectations this year. And you're saying, well, don't you owe it to your group? Mm-hmm. Or do you not? Do you just pluck off pieces as they go and say, hey, look, we're turning it over to you guys for next year? You know, it's a great run that you've had. It's been fun to watch. The youth and energy that you guys have shown has been great, but we're trading away two of these guys because we think it's better for the future of our franchise. And, you know, sorry if that diminishes your playoff chances as they're kind of hanging by a thread. Who's making that call? And is it Jeff Solomon, the interim GM, in conjunction with the two assistants there and Dave Notis and Martin Madden? Or is it the new guy that comes in 2 weeks beforehand at this pace, if it even happens by then? This could be something that doesn't, you know, the Samuelis, their owner, said it in a statement back when Bob Murray resigned, was we're efforting to get someone in place by the summer. And I was like, by the summer? Like, I appreciate the need for patience and the want to do it right. But man, that leaves your team hanging for a really long time.
Hey, Frank, I feel like we have discussed, and I mean Halford and I on Vancouver Radio, the Edmonton Oilers this week more than we've discussed the Vancouver Canucks, which is kind of funny.
Oh.
The Oilers have the Florida Panthers tonight at home, the Ooh. Calgary Flames Saturday, and then Tuesday they're in Vancouver.
That is a great three-game stretch, by the way.
Totally. Like
Battle of Alberta on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. That's perfect.
And then head into Vancouver for a team that's had like the opposite season to the Edmonton Oilers, with the Canucks with their dreadful start and turning it around, as opposed to the Oilers with their great start and their dreadful stretch of play lately. Are the Oilers likely?
By the way, those two things intersected almost at the same time. Like almost exactly when the Canucks made their coaching change,
I know.
That's when the Oilers totally fell off a cliff.
I know. It's been fun for us to watch in Vancouver. Is there anything more going on in Edmonton than just maybe they'll sign Evander Kane, and if they get lucky with a goaltender available, maybe they'll do that? Because I wonder if these next three games, if they don't go the way the Oilers want them to do, could force Ken Holland to do just something.
It's possible. It's not what they've been talking about, I can tell you that. The conversations that they've been having internally have been, they've talked quite a bit about goaltending, and they've been sizing up the market in terms of what that looks like, who are some of the targets and names that they could pursue. So I think there's been increased conversation there. Obviously, the Kane one, we know, you know, or have an idea of how far down the track that went. But the fact that there's this investigation that's still ongoing at the moment, this potential discipline and suspension that might come from it, that could certainly make a signing way more difficult. That's thrown a wrench into that. And I don't foresee a coaching change, at least not in the, you know, very near-term future. It always kind of cracks me up when you see, you know, some reporting or some speculation out there. Well, if they don't win this game against the Sens, well, then he's going to get fired. Like, it's like, if that was really the case in a front office, like, wouldn't you know enough then to have made the decision? Like, who bases that on one game of results? Like, if you're even having the conversation, it probably tells you that you need to make the change.
This sounds exactly like the conversation we had, by the way, when Travis Green was still the
perfect
head coach.
That means you guys are really smart.
and then they lost to Pittsburgh on national TV.
Yeah.
And the change was made.
That changes everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that they lost. It was the way they lost and how lifeless it was and all the things that happened in the arena that made it sort of untenable. It's growing towards that direction in Edmonton, but it's not there quite yet. And in fact, it must be the topic du jour in Vancouver today, because I'm actually about to post a story from Chris Gear, former Canucks assistant GM, who breaks down the Oilers and what's been going on and also sort of gives some insight into what it was like working for the Canucks at, you know, while all that stuff was going on and sort of how difficult it makes it to, you know, keep your eyes on exactly where they need to be.
A friendly reminder for those that are just getting up to speed here, former Canucks assistant general manager Chris Gear, now writing for Daily Faceoff with Frank Saravelli. Yeah, so be sure to check that out when the post goes live today. That'll be good. So on the subject of the Oilers and executives and general managers, a guy that's routinely been tied to solving the Oilers' goaltending woes is, of course, Marc-Andre Fleury, who's in Chicago. But I go back to our conversation earlier. Chicago's another one of those teams that doesn't have a full-time general manager. They've got an interim in Kyle Davidson, and he's got some things that he's going to need to figure out if he's the guy in the big chair come trade deadline time. What are you hearing out of Chicago? Because obviously that is another situation where I think it sounds like they're going to preach patience because they want to make sure they get it right after the Kyle Beach scandal and everything that came from the fallout from there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Kyle Davidson is going to be the guy in the chair, at least at the deadline. I would be surprised if he's not their general manager moving forward. I think they want to set up a structure that includes a president of hockey ops. They may go outside the box, try and bring someone in from a different sort of path, you know, maybe someone with some other sport experience. They're interested in trying something different, and they're willing to, you know, sort of go through the process to see what's out there and what that might or might not look like. So they're doing that. He's the man at the wheel, and I believe he has full autonomy at the moment to make whatever changes that he sees fit. And the guy that I've got circled there, that's going to be a really interesting conversation, is Alex DeBrincat. You know, a guy that has just scored at will, it seems, has one more year left on his deal at $6.4 million, and then at the end of it is a restricted free agent. But again, 23 goals this season, pretty significant pace that he's playing at. And my sense is the Blackhawks are they know they need to shake things up there. I think the general consensus has been Kane, Taves, and Seth Jones are kind of the three untouchables. And if you'd like to take a run at Alex DeBrincat, if you'd like to take a run at Kubalik or Brandon Hagel or Ryan Carpenter, go down the list, they are all potentially available. So when it comes to answering the first part of your question about Marc-Andre Fleury, he's been mentioned in Edmonton. I don't see it as a fit. He still holds a modicum of control himself, and I believe the Blackhawks, you know, as they coaxed him back to play this year after that trade that was so surprising, part of the deal, I believe, between the Fleury camp and Stan Bowman was, we're not moving you anywhere unless you're comfortable with it. So he's going to be able to call his shot in some ways. And the team that I've had circled for Marc-Andre Fleury is not Edmonton. It's not some of these other places that have really needed a high-profile goalie. I think it's Colorado.
Interesting.
Oh, that'd be a good fit.
Can you imagine how spicy that would be? Colorado and Vegas meeting in the West final.
That would be terrific, actually. Lehner against Fleury. That would be amazing.
There's also a sense of urgency in Colorado this year, especially with Nazem Kadri being a pending UFA. I'm not saying that the Avs are going to fall off the face of the earth next season. They got some pretty good young players on that team, but Kadri is having such.
They also have nothing to show for.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, we remember the Nathan MacKinnon quote after the Avs were eliminated from the playoffs. Like, I've been in this league for a few years and I haven't won you know what. So there has to be that sense of urgency in Colorado this season. Just real quick, Frank, is there any way that the Avs are going to be able to keep Kadri?
I think it's possible. I mean, they could get creative. You know, what do they do with Eric Johnson and his $6 million salary that's has one more year left on his deal? You know, what does their goaltending situation look like moving forward? How much are they spending on that position? If they really wanted to, they could find a suitor for some of the other guys on their list. You could probably, you know, Burakovsky, he could walk at the end of the year and become free agent. All of a sudden, like, you know, Nichushkin, he's had a good year. Does he go to free agency? Like, you can find a way, even with the cap remaining either flat or increasing by $1 million, to get Kadri, I think, to a number that fits for him and the Avs.
Frank, you're the best, man. Thanks a lot for doing this today. Glad to hear you're on the mend. We'll do this again next week. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll do this on Wednesday or Thursday.
Sounds good, guys. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you. Frank Saravalli here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. A reminder, head to Daily Faceoff later today to check out that latest piece from former Canucks assistant general manager Chris Gear, who's now working as a writer at dailyfaceoff.com. Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, speaking of former Vancouver Canucks assistant coach Nolan Baumgartner is going to join us. He will be part of the crew that is going with Team Canada to the Winter Olympics. For hockey, that is. We'll talk to Baumer about all that. And obviously, we'll talk about his time and tenure with Travis Green in Vancouver. That is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It is the Halford and Brough Show with Nolan Baumgartner next on Sportsnet 650.